Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'adhotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and this is another special edition of our New Day Resurrection program. Of course, our regular program is aired every Saturday evening at 10:30, and we are now going into our sixth year. And so with that said, we are really getting ready to unveil and release some very powerful things. Before we begin tonight's program, we of course give thanks and praises to our Creator, and we are certainly very cognizant and appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Tonight's program is a continuation, part two, if we may, of last night's dialogue. And, of course, that was, again, focusing on the travesty, the injustice that we just witnessed on Saturday, that being the verdict of not guilty as it pertains to George Zimmerman. And we, the people, we'd say he is more than guilty. And we'll definitely need to be held accountable. We're going to talk more about that tonight, including the fact that the Justice Department, from what we're hearing, is considering filing a possible suit against George Zimmerman. The suit would have to be in reference to what is known as a hate crime. That is perhaps the only way that the situation can be, addressed and continued at this point in time. So what we'd like to know is, what do you think? Do you think the Justice Department will, in fact, do that? Or do you think, what do you think? We're going to open up the line very shortly, and we're going to have another open mic tonight so that you are able to air your opinion. But before we do that, we want to remind you that a great, great, great woman by the name of Ella Baker made a very profound statement not too long ago, and that profound statement was turned into a song, some music, some words, some lyrics, and the person or the group that was made known for this particular song is Sweet Honey in the Rock. And so we'd like to take time to share this with you because it's certainly more than appropriate today.
We believe in
Freedom cannot rest until it comes. Same thing as no justice, no peace. Again, that was Sweet Honey in the Rock. And some of the words in that song, of course, was the words attributed to Mother Ella Baker. For those who do not know, on October 25th and 26th, the Million Women March, the original and the official Million Women March, will launch its international movement. And with that, we will begin to install our 12 sister saints. You know, in developing the movement, it has really been a interesting process. And one of the things that from our ancestors that I was given to do was to make certain that we begin to put our sisters into the type of position that is necessary for today. And so with that said, starting on October the 25th of this year, those who are members of the Million Women Movement, those who are supporters, those who are affiliates, will be asked to uphold the legacy and to continue to pay tribute to our first 12 sister saints. Later on in the month, we're going to tell you who they are. I'm going to tell you who two of them are now. You just heard Ella's song. And so, of course, with that said, Mother Ella Baker is one of our 12 sister saints. Along with Mother Ella Baker is Queen Mother Moore. And next weekend, we will be observing and celebrating and paying tribute to Queen Mother Moore because it is her Earth Day. on the 27th is Queen Mother Moore's Earth Day. She almost reached 100 years of age. And, of course, when it comes to reparations, we know that she was the modern-day Harriet Tubman and then some. Tonight, we are paying tribute to one of our queen sisters, and, of course, that's Assata Shakur. Today is Sister Assata's Earth Day. And we want to remind all of you that we have to continue to not only be watchful, but we have to make certain that we take our positions and keep our post in terms of the idea and the concept of hands off Assata. Now, remember, this year on May the 2nd, the FBI added our sister to their most wanted terrorist list. And, you know, Brother Lee made it an excellent point when we spoke a few months back and talking about how, it wasn't Brother Lee, I think it was Baba Shango, and said how now with them putting Sister Assata on the terrorist list, that means that other countries can now get involved. So, you know, again, we need to be very, very careful and very watchful as to what's going on. And with that said, we've kind of developed some campaigns that we're going to be kicking off. We're going to tell you a little more about that later on. We're going to play some clips from Sister Assata as we go into tonight's program. But what we want to do also right now is get ready to go back to our live line. We're going to talk more about, needless to say, the injustice that has recently occurred, and the latest developments. Now, of course, last night we talked with Dr. Randy Short, we talked with Brother Lee, we talked with Sister Gloria, and I mean just several people, Sister Basima. We're going to continue that dialogue tonight because there is some new developments, and as you know, from what we hear, there's been some rioting. I haven't got the full scoop on it yet, but I'm really hoping that black folks didn't do that in our neighborhood this time. You know, that's what happened during the 60s, so I'm hoping we learned by now. But nevertheless, you know, the outcry for justice is very clear. It seems that the Justice Department is considering pursuing their suit, of course. From what we understand, that would have to entail what is known as a hate crime. So what we're going to do is go to our line and ask you tonight, do you think the Justice Department is going to do that? We're going to first go to caller, you're at 6029, and then I think we might have Dr. Randy Short waiting as well, and then we're going to go right to him. Caller, you're at 6029. What do you think? Do you think that Eric Holder, the Justice Department, is going to file a suit against Zimmerman?
First of all, peace, sister. My position is that I don't see how they could do otherwise. It seems to me they have to follow up. You know, recently they talked a lot about this particular juror in so-called B-37. Her relationship, at least her husband's relationship, with the defense attorney, Michael Mara, is very suspect. Mm-hmm. That's very peculiar. In addition to that, this woman is was in the process of writing a book. Now, prior to the trial, she must have had some insight in terms of exactly what was going on, because it prompted her to actually start the process in terms of a book. And so, therefore, that smacks up some kind of irregularity, some kind of collusion. So I think that when you look at that, and when you look at also the fact that this particular juror was very antagonistic toward those individuals who actually took the streets to protest what happened to Trayvon Martin. She referred to them specifically as rioters, which means has a very negative connotation in terms of not only how you see the people in the streets, but also how you see Trayvon Martin. And superimposed upon that, this notion that, you know, that somehow she refers to this creepy-ass cracker as Georgie. I mean, I think it's very, very inappropriate in terms of given the seriousness of the case that just went down. So, therefore, I think that those issues alone, I think, should compel the Justice Department to seriously go down to Florida and seriously look into exactly what happened, the kind of corruption, the kind of collusion that took place that made it possible for this guy to be acquitted. So I think they have no choice at all, sister.
All right, brother. Well, I appreciate that response, that comment. I think it's right on point. Unfortunately, I'm going to state my position. And I mean, I agree. I definitely agree. But will they file? I really doubt it. Now, I could be wrong. I'm hoping I'm wrong. I don't like being wrong, but I'm hoping that this time I'm wrong. But I just don't see it happening. I'm going to tell you why I don't see it happening. You know, from what I understand, and again, we're going to try to get one of our attorneys on very soon, hopefully Brother Alton Maddox. But from what I've kind of been told up to this point is that the Justice Department will have to file under a hate crime, whatever the criteria is for that. And so far, all of the so-called testimony or whatever you want to call it that has been issued doesn't give any indication of that, okay? So, again, unless there is some other information
I'm not sure if that's particularly correct. When you look at the evolution of this particular trial, in terms of things that he espoused, when he espoused this thing about these punks, these people, Michael Moore alluded to the fact that when the original original statements made by George Zimmerman was he referred to these fucking coons, in which the judge Nelson disallowed, and so therefore it never made the trial. So clearly, when it comes to federal statutes, they have a much broader way in which to bring in all those kind of things that in fact indicate that in fact his motivation had to do with the kid's race. So I think the Justice Department is not won't be limited by this notion about stand your ground or these ambiguous statements by the judge as she instructed the jury in terms of, how they should go about, proceeding toward this thing we call justice. So I think the federal courts are uninhibited or unencumbered by, those kind of subjectivities. And I think just in terms of broader law, I think it gives the federal court much more leeway in terms of bringing into court those kind of things that really looks at in terms of his motivation, in terms of what he's doing and why he did it, and more specifically, why the hell did you approach him in the first place, given the fact that he wasn't bothering about it? He was just walking. Why did you approach him? What compelled you to approach him? Obviously, there was there's some subjectivity that compelled him to go approach this young boy. That's very, very clear. And then, too, the whole notion in terms of, all of these injuries supposedly inflicted upon this boy, this punk Zimmerman, clearly, those injuries are suspect. If, in fact, that the boy pounded the boy head and the wounds, there's no way the wounds could be superficial if you pound somebody's head on concrete. The wounds would not be superficial. So, therefore, there's a lot that needs to be brought out, but it only can be brought out in the context of under federal statutes and with federal government gets involved, which have a broader latitude in terms of dealing with all these issues in which the state prosecutors are limited in terms of bringing it into being. So I think that the federal government have a much better opportunity to convict this fool than the state.
All right. Well, brother, you know what? When you put it that way, I'm almost inclined to say, yep, I certainly agree. Again, I hope it does happen. And given what you just said, I mean, you really put it into perspective. I certainly appreciate that. What is your name?
Haki.
Brother Hakeem, thank you so much. You really put a lot of things, as far as I'm concerned, into a lot more clarity. I'm certainly more hopeful. I'm sure that our family listening is also as hopeful. If you don't mind, I'd like for you to stay right there. I'm going to bring in Dr. Randy Short, and let's get some comments from him. I want to also remind you, as we bring Brother Randy in, that of course, you may have heard that Ben Jealous, the NAACP, are making some very interesting statements. I'm going to reserve that for now, particularly their statement, or his statement, rather, as pertains to Sister Asada. We're going to go into that segment very shortly, but I want to keep where we're at for the moment. And with that said, I'm going to bring in Dr. Randy Short. Brother Randy, do we have you on this line? Uh-oh, let's try again. Hold on. I think we might have one. This line, there we are. Brother Randy, we got you now?
Yes.
Yes, great. Okay, very good. All right, now you heard what Brother Haki just said. Wow, I'm, you know, I think he really kind of put some insight into that. And the Federal Justice Department do have, you know, more of a broader scope. And so what do you think?
Well, I think that we need to go back to square one. Obama and Eric Holder are all recipients, protégés of people who designed it. Zimmerman is the son of a powerful Jewish man with clearly some connection. I don't think that anyone who doesn't want their funding or their campaign money reduced is going to sacrifice putting away this child molesting slob with three felonies when they can get lots of Zionist cash.
We're having a difficult time kind of hearing you. I'm not sure.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
End? Okay, yeah, that's better.
Okay, I'm saying that these men, Obama and Susan Rice and all the other people, are basically protégés or the personal chattel property of Zionists who fund all the political campaigns. And if they don't want to lose some key states, they're going to let this Jewish man walk for killing Trayvon. And Obama's going to swallow tolls, and black people will swallow it. That's how I don't think anything's going to happen. I think that the reason Eric Holder was trotted out is because black people are disgusted with Obama, and I thank God for that. It's taken forever. I mean, he's done everything except smear his bowel movement over Martin Luther King's monument on the mall to let us know he doesn't like us, and pee-peed on Malcolm X's grave with Betty to say to us he doesn't care. So they trot out another black face to boondoggle us. I'll only believe it when Zimmerman is in protective custody, afraid of the brothers in a federal prison. When he's in there, afraid, and he sleeps with a razor blade in his anus, I'll believe it. Until then, I believe nothing. It's all a lie until he's jailed. It's all a lie until Zimmerman's father is jailed for conspiracy and his mother's jailed for perjury. She's a lying tramp. The whole family would have to be jailed. When they take the $300,000 with penalties that he got, that when they're all charged as a criminal conspiracy and rounded up, and that includes other people in the judiciary who expunged his three felonies, all the people who ignored or wouldn't pay attention to the white females molested by Zimmerman. When all those folks are disbarred, jailed, and moved, I'll feel something. One man going to jail isn't enough for me because it was a system that freed him. The system is corrupt. The judiciary of Florida is filthy. And so him going to jail, that's, if we got that, we'd really be foolish if we accepted that and thought that was justice. Have you noticed you've never seen a picture of Zimmerman's daddy? Have you noticed you've seen everything except for Trayvon's genitalia when it comes to the Martin family? And yet you've seen no pictures. Who is his father? How come this man has been given anonymity for over a year? Because you know what? I bet you there have been a whole lot of jacked up cases where he's destroyed black people. And if folks saw his face, folks would be screaming. So they've hidden because his father would need 24-hour guard if people knew what he looked like. Do you understand what I'm saying? And who runs the court? Who make up a large number of the judges and prosecutors and people who railroad and put our people in prison? I'm not going to say which ethnic group is strong in there, especially in places like New York and Illinois and in Florida. I don't have to say. Or in Philly, or in Boston. Who's in the courts? Who are the lawyers? Who did Jesus fight with? Who asked Jesus to be crucified? I mean, 2,000 years ago, black folks were catching hell from certain types of people in the judicial system. So, no, I don't think anything's going to happen. They don't want black folks to riot, not because I want black folks to riot, but young black people may wake up, and that's what's frightening to them. Young black folks with no leadership have taken to the streets without any prompting. Okay, this is frightening to them because Al Sharpton with his Lady Clairol and Jesse Jackson with his gout and I guess hopefully all his child support payments kept current because he's rich enough, they can't say anything to young folks. They may catch a few bottles and alley apples because nobody wants to hear them anymore. So they're trying to figure out what to do with an irrelevant Kenyan-American named Obama, and I'm calling him a Hobama because he's such a whore to everybody's interests except for ours. There's nothing that's going to happen for us. What the only thing that would make Obama and these other people act differently is if they saw groups of folks going to the UN and also an impeachment movement, a black stay-home-and-not-vote Democratic movement, and an impeachment movement. If blacks wanted Obama impeached and Eric Holder fired, along with the crazy white Tea Party people, oh, man, it would be a brave new world because their game is over. So think about it. The racist Anglo-American elite are simply changing the goalposts in the game again. They're bringing out Eric Holder, who, by the way, is Barbadian. And so I'm not impressed. I'm not knocking anybody from the islands, but Eric Holder is one of those light-skinned ones that comes from that West Indian regiment who made their name shooting down other people who were fighting against slavery of African descent in Jamaica and Guyana and throughout the Caribbean. That's where Eric Holder comes from. He comes from an aristocracy of sellout black neck, shoot down blacks who want their freedom. That's who and what he is, and they're trotting them out just in time to shoot down another movement, and we don't see it.
Wow. Well, this is open mic night, and so we are saying if any of you had a comment or something you'd like to add to that or to respond to, we certainly welcome you to do so. Brother Haki, we still have you on. Did you care to comment?
Well, I think I think the brother elucidated some very valid points. I mean, there's no question that Barack Obama and the system generally is antagonistic toward the interests of African people, not only in this country but worldwide, and that is no question about that. But I think just from a tactical point of view, it's a good thing in terms of at least to give lip service to this notion that you can pursue charges against the Zimmerman guy. Keep in mind, we understand the oppression and marginalization of African people that exist in society. But what they understand is that in order to further their agenda, a certain amount of appeasement has to take place in terms of giving people the perception and the fact that they really care about justice, that in fact justice is an American concept. Of course, you and I understand justice has never been and never will be an American concept. Not as long as you've got a capitalist framework, you can never have justice. That's just a cold reality, and we understand that. But tactically speaking, we have to accept things what they are in terms of, you know, we move the pendulum, you know, a bit at a time. You know, we can't move it wholesale. We only do it in bits and pieces, and so we take a victory wherever we can get it, and that's just the way the movement goes. It would be ideal and it would be nice if we just, you know, could magically wave a wand and the masses of African people just wake up and say, listen, I see clearly what the enemy is. I understand clearly. We can organize. You know, we're not going to. You know, we're going to be focused. We're going to be dedicated, and we're going to sacrifice. Because the bottom line is, it's going to take some sacrifice in order to change the condition, material conditions that our people are confronted with. But we have to have the same mindset. We have to think alike. None of us are think alike. Then we have to understand the social reality or the political reality that we're confronted with. The problem is that for most of our people, we don't understand concretely the social and or political reality that we're confronted with. There are those of us who perceive ourselves as American. Now, what does that mean to perceive yourself as American? Obviously, if you perceive yourself as American, then the individualism, the I, is bigger than the group, and this notion that, you know, that the highest aspiration is achieve, you know, some kind of self-glorification. Of course, mm-hmm. we know in that context, I could never resolve the problem, the overwhelming problem the masses of our people face. It's going to take collective action and collective thought for our people to work together to change this thing. And so we do understand that. But if we can use the government, at least, to give the perception, in fact, that the struggles that we wage on the street does have an impact, then it's a good thing for us. Whether or not Obama and the Attorney General Holder, whether or not they are committed to the idea in terms of pursuing justice against this creepy white cracker, is irrelevant. What is important for us is that at least it furthers this aspiration, this notion that, in fact, that working together, in fact, can bring about change, and that is what is important. Now, if they pursue this thing in terms of the Justice Department, they're not going to do it because they give a damn about justice. That's not it. For them, it's purely tactical, and that's okay. For us, the benefits to us as well in terms of getting our people to understand that you see the young brothers and sisters out there on the streets raising their hand, going to prison, going to jail, mobilizing.
Mm-hmm.
Listen.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take that. It's going to take that to change this vicious system. It's going to take that and much mm-hmm. more to change this vicious system. But you have to start somewhere. There has to be a process. And the process continues. You know, we're constantly struggling for clarity, trying to get our people to understand the hardcore reality of what we're confronted with. Now, you know, unfortunately, we don't have, you know, a lot of entertainers out here, with the exception maybe Nas, you know, KRS. You know, there are not many out here who are conscientious, more the technique, you know, New York
right.
Oil. There are a few of them out here who are actually educating the masses of the young people in terms of waking them up in terms of what's really going on. But the bottom line is that so many of our kids are inundated with that negative message, you know, to kick somebody's ass, you know, shoot somebody, you know, disrespect some hoe, you know, all this kind of craziness. You know what I mean? So therefore, it's a very protracted battle that we're engaged in. So we have to take the wins wherever we can, understanding that ultimately the goal is liberation of African people. But we have to take it step by step by step, and that's the best we can do.
Okay. Well, I certainly agree with most of what you said, my brother. The only thing that I think I need to add or wish to add, of course, is that, you know, we are now in what is known as 2013, and much of what we're seeing now, and also to say that, of course, is going to take a lot more action in order for there to be change. I think something similar was said maybe 50 years ago, perhaps even 50 years before that. It seems that we still keep saying the same things, doing some of the same things. With that said, one of the things that I have not seen us really do, and that is to really focus on the development of a nation, for lack of a better terminology. Something that will really exhibit or allow us to at least begin to operate to a greater extent, some form of self-determination. There have been, of course, some forms of it when we saw the Honorable Marcus Garvey, of course, even with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But, again, we're talking about 50 years plus of seeing something of that nature. So now, my question has to be, how are we going to make some of this happen today? Because obviously we need to. It seems like there's been a void. And while we keep kind of rehashing some of the things we need to do to show our resistance, and we certainly need to, but the other side of that is how and when will we proceed to do for ourselves? Because when it's all said and done, if we're not doing that, we'll continue to do demonstrations or to do response economically to them or whatever. But until we are operating on our own to a degree of reality, then we'll continue to rehash things and continue to keep the wheel turning and continue to, you know, keep saying the same thing because we're not doing anything differently. But how do you feel about that?
Oh, you're talking to Haki? I'm sorry, sister. Are you talking to me? I'm not sure. Hey, okay. I think there's some legitimacy to what you're saying. I think, but we have to keep in mind that this struggle is protracted. And keep in mind, you have an adversary on the side, you know, who's playing chess. And unfortunately, a lot of the times, you know, in the community, you know, because of the historical marginalization or historical oppression of our people, we're playing checkers. So it takes some time in terms of for the masses of people to really begin to grasp and understand chess in terms of the kind of moves, the kind of tactics and strategies being employed by the adversary. Now, at this point, a lot of our people don't perceive that an adversary exists, you know, in America. They perceive themselves as American, they perceive themselves as free, and that to suggest that there's an adversary is confusing to a lot of brothers and sisters, particularly a lot of young brothers and sisters who are confused by the very, very concept. So it's a protracted struggle. I mean, it would be nice if we could somehow just get people to, to come out, you know, to these meetings, you know, to get involved with movements, to get involved seeking clarity in terms of the situation we're confronted with. But, you know, it's just not that cut and dry. It's not that cut and dry. Mm-hmm. Now, when we talk about the role of propaganda, you got to understand, if America can impact on African people throughout the world, and they're not even outside of the borders of America, then imagine the impact, or just how powerful propaganda is within the context in the borders of North America. You see, when you look at Africa and you look at brothers and sisters over there, you know, envious of America, wanting to be like America, thinking America is the greatest thing in the world. Well, of course, where did they get that from? They get it from propaganda. Now, if they can deceive people thousands of miles away, what do you think in terms of the role of propaganda in terms of being able to see people right here in the borders of North America? So we got to understand this is a very powerful propaganda machine. Even though we want to discount that, we have to respect the fact that this is a very, very powerful propaganda machine, and it's getting more and more powerful. And I do understand the necessity in terms of trying to get things going, because the more we procrastinate, the longer it takes us to get about the business in terms of building a nation, you know, doing for ourselves, creating, you know, then the more and more powerful, the more and more difficult it becomes for us in terms of exact real change to the extent that we become empowered in a society. So there's no question about that. But it's a protracted struggle, and there's no shortcuts you're going to take. And it's just not going to happen. You just got to, even though we keep saying the same things over and over again and we try to get people to participate, we have to be patient and understand that the conditions themselves are going to be, in the final analysis, the thing that's going to get people to want to know what's going to happen. It's getting critical out here. And so I think that people are compelled to listen. Even if they don't want to listen, I think the conditions are going to compel a lot of our people to actually listen. I think it's only when people are amenable to the message can you actually move them. Right now, the bottom line is that we've been trying. I mean, the struggle continues. It didn't stop. It didn't begin with the first brothers and sisters who came over here in 1619. It continued up into the present. So, you know, I do understand the impatience, but the bottom line is that we have to acknowledge that we're up against a strong propaganda machine, and we have to take, you know, little steps, incremental steps in terms of getting our people to where we want them to be, in terms of making the necessary sacrifices, in terms of empowering our people and creating a nation and being in a position to do for ourselves.
You know, Brother Haki, I really, and I thank you for your comment and for your analysis. The thing, though, that I have to note is that, you know, I really encourage our brothers and sisters, and especially those that do research and do critical kinds of thinking and analysis, to really examine the Million Women March. Because when I began to put it in motion, we were up against all of that and then some. The propaganda machine and so forth. Not having a whole bunch of finances to even begin to go up against it. But you see, the one thing that I began to learn, and that is how to reduce our contradictions. And what I mean by that is I realized that it's very difficult to, on one hand, say, this is who we are. This is where we come from as a people, meaning we are really ingrained with some very rare kinds of stuff. I mean, that's been demonstrated over and over and over. Okay, so how does that become applied to the reality of today? Well, that's what the Million Women March did. The Men Women March said, look, we don't have any name figures. We don't have already an organization, national organization already in place. We don't have no budget. We don't have any advertising skills, et cetera, et cetera. But what happened? How are we able to reach and bring literally together more than 2.5 million people? And so while the propaganda machine was always against us and saying, oh, this is not going to happen, or this is whatever, whatever, what we knew was something else. So now I'm saying that to say that, yes, it is a protracted struggle. And given the fact that we are in 2013, it's obvious that it's a protracted struggle. But given the fact that we did have someone like the Honorable Marcus Garvey, given the fact that we did have someone like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, what I'm saying is that today, to hear in our dialogue with one another and then to come up with concrete possibilities or ideas as to self-determination, you really even hear being independent anymore. We talk a lot about liberation, and we should. We talk a lot about injustice, and we should. We talk a lot about so many different things, and we should. But it seems when it comes to us being independent and striving for that, there seems to be a void. There doesn't seem to be a lot of dialogue, and certainly not a lot of proposed kinds of ideas or concepts or whatever to make it happen. And I'm really concerned about that, because as we talk to the young folks today, we're talking to them about a lot of different things. But when I look at the activists in our community, when I look at the progressive organizations, the issue or the idea of self-determination is not something that's being discussed very often. And I'm just curious as to why that is. It's kind of a rhetorical question or statement, but I just wanted to put that out there because I'm hoping that the dialogues that we're having on this program and on many other programs, that we begin to really focus a little more on some of that, because in these past 30-plus years, it seems that that's a conversation that most are not having.
Well, one of the things, just to be succinct and let the other brother get on the line, I think there's a tremendous amount of sectarianism that exists with respect to organization in the African community. I mean, we got the nationalists who competed against the communists, who competed against the socialists, who competed against the Muslims. So there's a tremendous amount of sectarianism that exists in the African community. It's going to take time to have discourse. It's going to take time to actually, you know, get together and hash these differences out in terms of which way forward. So I wish it would a situation where, you know, it would be almost automatic, but people would yearn for the desire to actually engage in discussion or discourse around the issue in terms of which way forward for the African people. But unfortunately, sister, it doesn't work that way. I mean, you can put it out there and try to get people interested, but people have their own you know, political organization in which they perceive is the best way forward for African people. And on some level, you have to respect that, you know, so you can't simply belittle that particular organization and put them down and to express, your discontent with the way they do things. You got to simply understand this is their perception at this point in history. But, you know, the only thing you can attempt to achieve is at some point, sometime you actually have some real struggle in terms of which way forward, and out of that, there's a possibility of begin to work together, come together, and create the kind of organizations that you're talking about. Now, keep in mind, when you talk about the Million Man March, now, it was organizations that made that possible. Farrakhan made the call. But
no, I wasn't talking about the Million Man March.
Sister March. Okay, well, I don't know much about the Million Sister March.
Oh,
now, I don't know the organizers.
Yes,
I
can tell you about
part of that. Yeah.
Right.
That's why
I was saying specifically, we didn't have a budget. We didn't have an already existing organization. We didn't have any of those things that the Million Man March had for the most part. And that
you
was
did, you did it without an organization?
Well, let's put
it
this way.
You did it without an organization?
Without an existing without an already existing national organization. See, the Nation of Islam had and had had for several years a network or a system that was already in place. They had mosques all over the country. We didn't have that. We didn't have any of that. You see, there was no known person.
Nope.
So I'm saying, so see, we set the example, and again, and I'm saying this, you know, now that while I totally agree in terms of, you know, the there's so many organizations and so forth and so on. Well, there were so many organizations during the Honorable Marcus Garvey time. There were so many organizations during the Honorable Elijah Muhammad times. The point still being, they were still able to do what they did, and during a time period that certainly, you know, didn't have what we have today in terms of technology and so forth and so on. So I'm going to really put my foot in it and say that sometimes it seems that examples have to be set as opposed to waiting for something to happen. And I think given the fact that the Men and Women March was able to do what it did in a very unconventional and non-traditional way, at least from a European frame of reference, I dare say that in the next 5 years we'll be able to demonstrate what it is that I'm talking about.
And that's very impressive. Very impressive. Very impressive.
Oh, thank you, Brother Aki. And again, I thank you for your dialogue and your comments. I really enjoy it. Dr. Renshaw, do we still have you on our line?
Yes, you do.
Okay. I want both of you to still stay right there. I want to share with you and with our family listening audience something from Eric Holder.
Separate and apart from the case that has drawn the nation's attention, it's time to question laws that senselessly expand the concept of self-defense and sow dangerous conflict in our neighborhoods. These laws try to fix something that was never broken. There has always been a legal defense for using deadly force if, and the if is important, if no safe retreat is available. But we must examine laws and take this further by eliminating the common sense and age-old requirement that people who feel threatened have a duty to retreat outside their home if they can do so safely, by allowing and perhaps encouraging violent situations to escalate in public. Such laws undermine public safety. The list of resulting tragedies is long and unfortunately has victimized too many who are innocent. It is our collective obligation. We must stand our ground to ensure that our laws reduce violence and take a hard look at laws that contribute to more violence than they prevent.
Okay. Of course, that was Attorney General Eric Holder. That took place earlier today in Orlando, Florida. I can't say for certain, but
NAACP
church or something. But go ahead, brother.
Is it the NAACP convention? Is
yes,
that where
it was
is?
The NAACP. Yes, you're right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's where it was at. Mm-hmm.
And they shouldn't even be in Florida. They should have all gotten up and left. So, you know, they can't do nothing for me. And if the same NAACP that can't take a stand on the verdict is clapping about him taking a stand, they're a bunch of blackneck hypocrites. I'm sick of black people like that. I wish Zimmerman would pop a couple of them. That's how I feel. I'm sick of them. Look, how can this man, who sent all those guns to Mexico where thousands of people have died, talk about peace and nonviolence. How could a man who's in charge of justice for the country preside over the largest number of extrajudicial and judicial executions of black people in the last 5 years than at any time since Reconstruction, and he's talking about peace and standing ground? The only people he's fought aggressively against have been people who feel that black folks shouldn't be getting 40% of the abortions in the country. Those are the only people he's fought. He's useless, and they put him up. In fact, I'm here in D.C. Many people see Eric Holder as the leader of the civil rights movement to show you how delusional and stupid we are as a people. It's stupid. How can a non-African-American bureaucrat, a careerist, be a leader? He's an employee whose money comes from late-term abortions for the clinic that his wife co-owns. Now she's the trustee. And I think his wife does abortions, too. I mean, so you kill black babies to make your money. You're talking about peace. Oh, give me a break. Please, spare me. Okay, I'm sorry. Anybody but him, all right? He presides over the Justice Department, the EEOC, which falls under him, threw out 98% of all claims by blacks. What he could do, he doesn't. So how is he going to do something new? That's like a man that can't kiss you who tells you he's going to make you see waterfalls. That's a joke. He's a joke. Black people put their faith in the Democratic Party, Republican Party, they're jokes. Sister, you asked the question, what made the Million Woman March singular? It was a determination of the sisters to lift up the people no matter what it took, no matter who was or was with or was against them. The Nation of Islam and the other groups could have had an even bigger march. And I'm not picking on anyone in the nation when I say that when there was a $5 million contribution offered to the Nation of Islam for the halal meat contract, why did they offer to the Park Service instead of to a black businessman and then squabble over money after the thing is done? That was the other thing about the Million Woman March. It wasn't about the Benjamins. It was about the people. It's about the sisters. It's about solidarity. It was about healing. And unfortunately, a lot of black men are so caught up in their egos or who has the biggest ding-a-ling or whatever it is, the biggest car, the biggest chain or whatever, until we can't see our people need us to stand up. That's the difference. This was about reclaiming the humanity of the women and all those who gathered versus other folks giving bombastic speeches and fighting over who's going to be on the platform. That's the difference. The difference is you. Okay, I said it, and folks be mad at me. I don't care. Million Man March could have had 10 million people. In fact, there shouldn't have been. They collected all that money. Where'd it go? I'm not mad that folks got it, but wasn't there a promise that that money would be divided to create and put money into organizations to get us together? Did that happen with the money? Okay, I know how folks will come and beat me up. What happened to that cash? Some of that money should have been left behind, so when you did want to have your march 2 years later, it should have been there for you. Here's a check, sister. $50,000 or $100,000 or $500,000 seed money. Liberate our sisters. Tens of millions of dollars were collected. Where did it go? What happened to the National African American Leadership Summit? Where is it? Is there anything that remains? And how many million marches? Is going to be the million sellout march pretty soon. And people will have posters and hats and vendors, and maybe they'll be done with the Church of Scientology, or maybe the Mormons. There'll be some religious group that doesn't have the best interests of black people at heart, except for the money. That's the difference between your march and all the male marches. And I'm a proud black man. I love being a black man. I love brothers, but brothers make me sick. Why can't we come together? I mean, the sisters, gay black men can have multi-city gatherings during Black Gay Pride stuff, and all come together around having anal sex and giving head, and we can't come together to save our babies and our women? What the hell, black men? I mean, folks can come together for sodomy and not for our women, not for our babies, not for the survival of our race, but they can come together for money or to show off with Reverend Moon. I'm sorry, we're laughable. You know, I'm going to go in the subway. I'm going to disappear, but let y'all folks fight. I know they're going to be mad at me, but, you know, I'm just asking. Be mad at me, but
well,
I just said it.
We're going to open up some more lines because people just started pushing one. Now they want to be heard. But before you go, Brother Randy, I just want to make sure that, for the record, folks, the Million Women March did not do a collection that day. We're the only gathering of that type that did not do a collection that day. And I'll tell you more another time as to why we did not do that. I caught a lot of flack for not doing it. But nevertheless, that's the way the ancestors designed it, and that's the way it happened. So for the record, the Million Women March did not do a collection on that day. And
it was,
very, very difficult.
About the women. Now, why can't we brothers do the same thing? Why can't we? We can. I know we can. But we need leaders who are singularly minded, that will work with other black men, not trying to have the most women or be the biggest pimp, but be the have the biggest heart, the greatest servant. This is what we need, a different kind of ego, one that's proud of how much can you do to lift up your people versus being the biggest and the baddest. There's a difference between how white folks play basketball and black folks. You get a black guy on a basketball team and he don't think he needs anybody else. How you going to get to the pros if only you were playing against 11 other people, however many people play basketball? And that's point.
All right. Okay, we're going to go back to our live line, and we're going to open up a couple more lines. Family, you all are having some powerful dialogue tonight, and we thank you. We need to have this kind of dialogue, but with that, we also need to prepare accordingly and also deal with action. So with that said, let's see. We're going to go to 1716. We're going to go to you, and then we're going to open up 4460. But first, 1716, your comments for tonight.
Yes, ma'am. First of all, Hotep, Sister Filet. I'm honored to listen and learn. I'm a new listener, but a revolutionary from the time I was brought here. And as to guests, Brother Dr. Randy Short and Brother Hakeith, man, I concur with you in so many ways, but I just want to share something with Dr. Randy Short that, you know, in my experience in terms of being an activist, and I'm careful on labels and titles, you know, this is my life. You know, you could call me what you want to, and I'm not talking about you in particular, but, you know, sometimes I think we get caught up on labels too much. But you're talking about the Million Man March. I'm a part of the Million Man March group in Minnesota who's been meeting for the 18th year will be in October, the 16th. We didn't have any kind of, control of what happened on the hierarchy of that, but the objective was for black men to go back to their cities and organize. As far as money, we've been offered money from the time we started until now. $75,000 from General Mills. We've turned down plenty of money, and we've still been meeting and doing things autonomously for 18 years and not asking for a dime. One of the elders, we named a junior Million March group after, and we've been mentoring young black males since the Million Man March, and one of them is going on to get his Ph.D. One of the things that I say, Brother Dr. Randy Short, is you know what? I listen because I love information. And one of the things that I've learned out of all the years that I've been involved, brother, is that the information that's needed for and to the people that need it don't get it. There's a lot of great things that are going on, that's happening, that not a lot of us know about, you know. And for some reason feel like, you know, well, how do I get it? Hey, just get up. Wake up and make up your mind that we're going to get out here and get whatever is need to be done. Let's get it done. You know, let's be creative. You know, I got enough love, brother, for all of us. And my point is this, is that, yeah, there are brothers who have that unconditional love for, and I'm hoping and praying that Sister Filet will come to the anniversary of the Million Man March and make it a movement and help create a movement as opposed to us continuing to meet every year. I can pay the venue, who going to cook it, you know, we reflect, we invite people, but it needs to be a movement. How many of our children even know about the Million Man March or the Million Woman March? If we tell the story, they don't know about it. You know, so there's a responsibility for us that, to me, kind of is the ingredients, if you will, for all the things that we talk about that's not happening. You know, all those other things, the Al Sharptons and the Reverend Jesse Jacksons and the so-called leadership that get handed to us, that will fall off because, again, it's about application. You know, and we'll hold them accountable. That's the bottom line. And love don't hold no punches. Okay? It just hits you where you left. Okay?
Right.
And the chip.
I love it.
Hey, so Dr. Randy Short, Brother Hakeef, I could tell you, and it's at a black charter school that's been under fire for, I mean, this brother got some young black students, man, that's awesome. Minnesota been trying to shut it down for years. We helped the brother from the Nation of Islam, Keith Ellison, congressman, get elected. I can go on and on. But again, the struggle continues because, again, I ask my elders all the time, you know, when we going to move past this? You know, when are we going to connect? When are we going to connect with, you know, the sisters? And don't get me wrong, we communicate with the sisters who bring their children to the Junior Million Man March, you know, and talk to them about, hey, this is not about dropping off an old babysitter, because what we give them as young men, you know, we need it enforced at home. If you bring in several men in and out your house, we're wasting our time. So, again, it's about communicate, but go ahead,
brother. No, I just want everyone to know we're talking with Brother Jamie. He didn't identify himself, but you're going to be hearing more from him on upcoming programs, because I did get a chance to talk with Brother Jamie the other day, and we both concur. We've got to pull this thing together, and we're going to do that. As a matter of fact, some part of the conversation that we had the other day, we're going to go more in depth in the very near future, and it has to do with brothers coming together and dealing with the concept of protect and defend the black woman and the black community. So the brothers are getting ready to come together. We're, again, going to tell you more about that in some upcoming shows. Brother Jamie has, you know, really created that dialogue with he and I, and we're going to continue that dialogue with our family because we've got to make it happen. It's no way that a George Zimmerman would have been as easily motivated to do what he did if, in fact, he knew that brothers nationwide were organized and ready for self-defense. That just wouldn't have happened that way. He would have thought twice. Okay? So these are some of the things that we're talking about for the future. It's realistic. There are all kinds of town watches all over the country. Why can't black folks have their own town watch, for lack of a better word? But anyway, that's for another program. I'm going to bring in
Let's see, I said I would bring in a caller for, hold on one moment, my board is so tight tonight, I can barely find folks. Okay, we're going to go to 4460. We've got Brother Jamie on, we got Brother Haki on, and I think we still have Dr. Randy. Short on, go, 4460.
Greetings, okay. Power and progress. How's everybody?
All right, there you are. All right, my sister, greetings to you tonight.
Absolutely.
You have a comment for us?
My president general, and I want to give a revolutionary greetings, birthday greetings to our queen, warrior queen, Asana Shakur. You know?
Yes, absolutely.
I just want to say, like, once again, like, you know, everybody touched on a lot of things that must be done in terms of, you know, this unjust, corrupt, criminal system. What steps we should take to address the racial disparities in the courtroom, which we've been basically, you know, a few of us here, you know, have been addressing some of the injustices that, you know, are faced within the courtrooms. And my mm-hmm. thing is that I'm like, kind of like concerned about why we don't have these black judges, black attorneys, black prosecutors, black jurors, whoever that's, you know, of melanated skin, people of darker hues, why aren't they outraged about the situation that happened within the case?
Mm-hmm.
We all know who looked very closely during the beginning, you know, it was basically rigged from the door. Zimmerman Fowler is a magistrate, you know, which is a sort of like a position that's close to judgeship. You know,
mm-hmm.
nobody asks, none of our leaders requested a change of venue or nothing of that sort. But anyway, now we have President Obama. We have Attorney General, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, now about to, and I sent you the information, President General Embassy, about the upcoming event that's going to be held in your city,
mm-hmm.
Philadelphia, about redeeming a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have Attorney Holder is going to be, along with Melissa Perry, is going to be coming to Philly this month.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have a town hall meeting addressing the Trayvon Martin case. So just for a point of information, those who are in the Philly area and those who need to receive information, we'll send you the information about that upcoming town hall with, where all Conyers and all these folks from the Black Caucus that's supposed to be there. Is this a sad day, you know, as we could say, but there have to be some other types of modes of operation taking place. The thing about the boycott, you know, our people, you know, we have a problem with, you know, unity and commitment from our people. We always want to seize the time when it's time to raise our, you know, our personal gain, you know, and you know, things that will help us advance our people to, you know, these politicians to advance their careers, their political careers during times like this. And it's just sad. It's just sad to see this over and over and over again without our people coming up with a strategic plan to, you know, move forward in unity and have a plan of action from this day forward. Because if we, you know, after this, we've been saying enough is enough. But if we really serious about enough is enough, you know, the thing is that we need to have a definite plan of action, a 5-year, 10-year, 20-year, 50-year plan of action need to be in place as we speak. So It's so much to say, but, you know, and a lot of people have been saying some great things and proposing some, you know, progressive solutions, but it just seemed like, you know, the folks who, you know, gain access to mainstream media, they just basically talking the same old talk that they always do when we have Trayvons all over the world taking place. And then another thing is that where's the outrage again about our sister, Marissa Alexander, you know, and it's still no outrage. But, you know, I was given the opportunity to speak because, like I said, I'm no holds barred, but I was invited to speak today on behalf of the Newark Black Women Defense League, and I gave them straight to the chaser, you know, at this rally on some specific things that we've been talking about doing. And, you know, a lot of folks was like, you know, wow, you know. You know, and I may have ruffed some feathers, but the bottom line is that, like, you know, the talk is far from being over. I'm just tired. Like, if you can hear it in my voice, like, I mean, that screaming and yelling, you know, on the mic, you know, throughout these rallies and conferences and all that, you know, and no substance. It's just this sad because I'm ready to do something. You know,
well, as you know, my sister, MWM will be releasing its long-awaited 5-year-plus direct action plan and black print. That's going to be unveiled in October. We've kind of been working on this for 16 years, so that's definitely something that's going to happen. We can finally do that now. But I just want to also add to what you just said. Yes, I do know about the so-called Redeem the Dream. We talked about it briefly last night, that the Urban League is having their national convention or conference here in Philadelphia from July 24th to 27th. I'm definitely planning to attend one of those sessions to make certain that information is disseminated. So this is something that they had planned, you know, a year ago. It's not like, you know, they heard about Trayvon and then they decide to come. No, they planned this thing a year ago, but now they got something to really talk about. But let me just give you who some of their sponsors are. Comcast, NBC Universal. Also, AmeriHealth Mercy. Also, a very large group called Amamark. Okay. That's just a few. You can best believe these people are getting thousands and thousands of dollars from the corporation. So when you hear they got Congressman John Conyers, Congressman John Lewis, Barbara Anwar, Reverend Al Sharpton, Eric Dyson, Reverend Jesse Jackson, you know daggone well. See, what's going to happen at this particular gathering, they're going to run across something that they hadn't seen for a while, and that is some serious progressive black folks saying, you know what, y'all really need to go home, sit down, get out the way, because this nonsense is what they've been doing for the past 50 years, okay? So this is not going to go down this time the way they think. They've come to the city where Mumia Abdul-Jamal is our native son. So with that said, I can tell you, it's going to be some serious stuff going down when these people come to Philly. It's not going to be all of what they thought. They are going to encounter some opposition. Now, one other note I want to say is that I received a report a little while ago that indicated that Stevie Wonder agreed that Florida should be boycotted. Yes.
Call for a boycott.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So now, again, this is something that we've been talking about here at New Day for a few months as it pertains to the music industry. So we're adding Florida on, but we was already talking about boycott. I don't recall any other so-called civil rights groups or any other groups talking about boycotting.
okay? So for the record, family, we're making it very clear what our position has been and is. Okay, I want you all to stay right there. We're going to go to another caller.
Before we close, Empress, okay. I just wanted to say to you that we was extended the invitation to host our teach-ins about anything we want to discuss at the Source of Knowledge bookstore. So I was indeed able to connect with them today at the speak out in Newark, and they said that they're more than happy and glad to build with you and free of charge. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's on. So
okay.
we just need
Very
to
good.
Connect
Very
later
good.
On and get the dates.
Okay. And again, yep. family, that's what we're talking about. MWM is going nationwide. We'll come to your bookstore, your rec center, your church, your mosque. It doesn't matter. We have to make certain that we now bring unity amongst our sisters and amongst our community and our family. So, you know, we have the Speakers Bureau now ready. So for those of you who are looking for powerful, dynamic, progressive sisters, we have some for you to cover almost any area that you're interested in. Okay, we're going to go to, 3217. However, before we do that, I just want to shift for a moment and share a little something with you. Let's see if I can find it. Remember earlier we talked about, and again, we want to pay tribute and salute our sister, Queen Asada Shakur. And with that said, we want to raise the question, and then we're going to go to caller. You're at 3217. We're going to open you up in a few moments. But I want to share with you or ask the question to all of you. We still have all of you on the open mic. And the question is, should we have a U.S. Truth and Reconciliation Commission? Now, before you answer that, I want you to just check this out. Oh, give me a minute. It's queuing up. This is something that the head of the NAACP suggested.
Here we are. NAACP taking a position on Asada Shakur, who's in Cuba, has been the president, the FBI has just put her on the most wanted terrorist list, the first woman to be placed on it, and increased the bounty for her to $2 million.
This is a case, frankly, all of the political prisoner cases from the 60s are concerned. And, you know, closing the unsolved lynchings is something that we're still working on. And it makes you wonder if the country isn't coming to a place where we need some sort of truth and reconciliation commission to help us deal with what are very painful moments. I mean, you think about the police officers here, in the New York, New Jersey area, still the families still feel very aggrieved about the Brinks case, about what happened on the turnpike in this shooting. When you go down to Georgia, as I was a couple of weeks ago, and you have unsolved lynchings from 60 years ago, and you see this kind of pain on, you know, in the black community, and there's suspicion of sheriffs. People feel like they've been for years. And so we have not taken a position on the Shakur case, but I do think that we have to, if we're going to heal as a nation, look at the violence, the sort of politically motivated violence on both sides, and figure out how we heal both at once. I used to be the managing editor of a paper called The Jackson Advocate in Jackson, Mississippi. Our paper was burned down 3 times. My publisher used to have lunch with the Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan every month. And, you know, he comes in, you know, and I said, and, you know, comes to one day, I'm sitting there with all this work. I'm like, why? And he said, at the end of the day, he said two things. And one, ain't nobody in this country wants to talk to one of us about the Civil War again. We both are talking about it. He said, but two, it's time that we start listening to each other and figuring out how we heal this, because it's just not ending. The war, it just isn't ending. The Civil War isn't ending. And these are two old men, you know, both within a decade of dying, who sat down across great difference, across great pain. My publisher had covered the Emmett Till case. He had many friends killed by the Klan, and said, it's just time for us to bury the hatchet and figure out how we move forward. And so my hope is that we as a country can start a conversation about a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, because these old wounds, the wounds around Shakur in the kind of progressive community and so many other cases, you know, so many Shakurs, right? The wounds, you know, down south with the unsolved lynchings, it's just time for us to find a new way. I don't see it really ending. You know, and I don't see politicians kind of backing down and saying, you know, we're gonna approach this with our whole mind and our whole heart. The battle lines are drawn, and they've been drawn for a long time.
Ben Jones, I want to thank you for being with us, presidency over the NAACP. Coming.
Okay. That is, I mean, that's just hilarious. There's so many Shakurs. Okay. All right. Question again. Should we have a U.S. Truth and Reconciliation Commission for healing? Now, we know what happened in South Africa with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission there. Oh, my gosh. Okay, but I'm going to let you all comment. I'm going to open up your mic at 3217, and I think we got Dr. Randy Short back, too. We're going to go back to his mic in a minute, but first we're going to hear from 3217. Woo, please give us your comment tonight.
Yes, it's the Revolutionary Greetings. This is Brother Lee.
Oh, my God. Yes, Brother Lee.
In respect to our sister, our freedom, revolutionary freedom fighter in Cuba, Sister Sata.
Yes.
We'd like to wish her a happy birthday and many, many more. And she will always be a symbol for our people as it relates to resistance, freedom, equality, and organization. We'd like to say happy birthday to her. Now,
indeed.
In terms of your question about this Truth and Reconciliation Commission, I think that is seriously premature. I don't think this is the time and the stage of our struggle and development to even try to even attempt to address or doing something of that nature. It's too much premature. Because when you negotiate, you won't negotiate from a position of strength and not a position of weakness. So that can wait. And in essence, we will get all of those things on our terms once we have resolved certain contradictions and issues among ourselves. Now, let me make my point in terms of all of these things we talk about tonight around Trayvon, this whole thing, my analysis. I heard Brother Haki. I heard Brother Randy and the sister, I heard everybody. I stated this one time before on your show, and we still haven't come to value this particular point. And I think part of it is because of the fact that we are living this axiom, those who fail to learn that history is doing to repeat the mistakes 1,000 times more. And this is what we're doing. And this is why we haven't really qualitatively advanced in terms of dealing with these terrorist behavior that are being conducted against our people inside and outside of the United States. I think Hal Cruz wrote a book that we need to read, a classical book called The Crisis Among the Negro Intellectual. Let me repeat that. The Crisis Among the Negro Intellectual. And we've been dealing with that crisis from the inception when we first arrived here as enslaved people. He said we have three choices. Either we stay here and integrate into the capitalist system and try to make it work favorable to us, or we stay here and create our own independent African nation, or the third choice is we return to go back home and make our home become the base in which we function and live and become truly independent. Okay. He stated that not until we solve that particular dilemma, we will continue to be stagnated where we are in 2013. We will continue to have the kind of mistreatment that you see to our people, not only in the U.S., but throughout the world. So let's talk about the essence of resolving these issues, not reforming these issues. Because there seem to be, at this point in time, most of us are addressing it from a reformist perspective. And when we talk about addressing the issues, we got to talk about this question of power. These acts would never happen if we as a collective people had the power to make them not to happen. When people talk about this reconciliation commission thing, anybody want to participate in that, I ask you is to ask your oppressors, are they willing to give up their power? If they're not, you're playing games. You're playing games. But let me just say this. It is true that with Harold Cruz's position is, the biggest problem we are confronted with, and we don't take it serious, is the battle of ideas, ideological development, ideological struggle. Our people do not participate in ideological struggle. That is the first and foremost important battle that will lead the pathway to all the other battles and issues we have. It also will give us the continuity to maintain, sustain, and build. We create movements that come and go. The question becomes, what makes movements come and what makes movements go? How do we sustain these things? And if you don't pay attention to the importance of constant ideological struggle, in political terms, we say constant political education, you will never be given the proper tools and weapons to defeat the enemy that we are dealing with. And the enemy that we are dealing with, this state, in this form, political sense, economic sense, sociological sense, you know, is the enemy of capitalism and imperialism, with its cousins and uncles, Zionism, racism, sexism, etc. All these systems that exploit human beings are our system. We must understand that. And we can put things in their proper perspective. The industrial police complex system is a part of the capitalist system. It's a tool. Now, if we believe that if we take more Africans and they become judges, they become wardens, they become presidents, you, again, have not addressed the issue of what is the role and the functions of these institutions within these societies. They only can perpetuate the values, the principle, and those who are in power. That's not the solution, to get more judges. Because just by the nature of them being a judge means they will have to support, and they will only carry out the values and interests of that particular institution. What you have then is what you have today in terms of the presidency. It makes no difference whether you're African or European, and I'm glad your brother won it. So now, historically, we don't have to argue this question no more. And that's why, again, it's important for us to do our analysis to understand history and not to continue to repeat every mistakes. Let's talk about power. How do you acquire power? What is the basis of power? And when we say power, we're basically going to use a general definition. You know, the power we're talking about, the ability to do. The ability to do what? The ability to protect yourself, the ability to feed yourself, the ability to educate yourself, the ability to create whatever you need to create to maintain your society and your people. But even with the ability, you need an objective material basis to do that. If we're going to build a nation, where that nation going to be built and offer what sets of principles and values we're going to build upon? Can we truly say it would be just? We're talking about building one here inside a country where other people are over here before we came. And some people want to argue and debate that. We can do that later on when we talk about the Moors or whatever. Or do you want to look at the place so we can objectively say we know what's air belongs to us and no one can take that from us? In that case, we're talking about Africa. But the battle is the ideological question that we have not resolved. This is why we have all of these issues. This is why we have all these issues. Once we have unity of thought, the actions, the program, the organization forms, all that stuff will come into play. But we constantly run from this question of ideological struggle. And as Kwame Ture would once say, as Nkrumah has said, as our forefathers have said, and the history said, we need constant political education. That's the only way you can overcome the propaganda machine that the imperialists has created. It's very, as Brother Haki said, very sophisticated and scientific. Do most African people know in this country that they have 26 think tanks all geared towards studying African people only? That's all they do. They study every aspect of our lives and scientifically study us and make changes based upon based upon their current and past analysis of us. They have 26 think tanks. That's all they do. Where are our think tanks? Number one, we argue and we see the value of think tanks. We not confront and pay nobody to sit down and think. Because we think the niggas are getting over on us, screaming the N-word. I ain't paying no money for the niggas to sit down and read and study. But it's the idea that's the most important thing in terms of how people are either going to be confused or be conscious, to be clear or to be indecisive. This is where I come to struggle with our people here. This is what we need. I don't care about political differences. That's cool. But let's create a process or structure where we can sit down and argue and hammer these things out and make a decision. What is the correct path that we must take first and foremost? Then we can sit down and talk about strategy, programs and stuff. Because you know, we can do programs. Even if you don't have a program, you come together, somebody can have a program they're going to try to impose upon you. The question would be whether or not the program would really fit the aspiration and the things we need to do to resolve our people as a whole. U.S. power, Western European power, is not based inside the United States. Their power is their ability to maintain the control of the dominance of Africa. We are over 100 years of Pan-Africanism as a solution to all the ills. There will be no Trayvon once we achieve Pan-Africanism. We won't have to worry about the industrial police complex and how to deal with people inside America, outside America. Yes, Mark Garvey was right. He said we need an army. Not only do we need an army, we need what kind of army? An international army. Just like the imperialists today have their armies that can go all around the world and fight you in Grenada. If they don't like you in Venezuela, they can organize coups against other people. If they don't like you in Libya, they can come and take a whole country. How are we talking about fighting somebody internally in the United States when these folks can go and take countries, and we're talking about internally and fighting somebody with something where we don't have, you know, the material basis doesn't exist? So where's that planning process? So what? We only have two choices in terms of path we got to take. You don't have them for two. The question becomes which one is correct, reform or revolutionary. That's all, because you only have two types of institutions, two types of sizes. The only thing can be reform. That's what that is. Those things will continue to get the same result, but you may do it a different, use different methodologies. Or you can eradicate the total essence of that and get something new. That's a revolutionary change. So first, our people need to understand and stop the scanning of revolutionary, being revolutionary. That's what your enemy understood. They called themselves revolutionary when they broke away from their own class in Europe, came over here and created a society where they were benefiting control. That's why you must have great respect. To talk about Sister Asada, you must have great respect and come take a look at the Cuban Revolution and their people and why they raised the hell with the most powerful country in the world. Even if they collapse today, history will show that country been one of the greatest countries that has ever produced during this time period of history to be able to maintain that independence for over 50 years, dealing with the most powerful country in the world. History will show when it was in power, and controls the means of production, control the material base, they was able to create an economy and could dictate what kind of society we'll have 10, 20 years later and keep stable. History will show, it will show that we said Africa is the base, it's the core of the revolutionary movement for our people. And we have to start looking at that and start going off and on. Not only did Harold Cruz raise the question, I think W. Du Bois, who was an African, who was a member of NAACP, started that way and ended up in Africa and gave us American citizenship and told us this is the path to go. Mark Garvey told you this is the path to go. There's a host of history. And we still haven't resolved the question. That's why we're still so weak and divided. And yes, no. There are battles that we have to fight where we are. I'm not saying we can't deal with this and just leave it alone, but I think they must be put in proper perspective of where we're going with it as we wage these battles. The fix will end from the beginning of this course, Kate. The fix will end from the beginning because, number one, any prosecutor knows that you don't have juries whose husbands or wives are lawyers. That's one of the first things they tell you in school. No one even researched the relationship of their boy or father to the whole judicial department. All of them from the same community knew each other. I maintain they even picked the juries, and they pre-script the whole thing out and still scripting it out. I don't know if people saw CNN yesterday, but they had one European lady who gave a version why they voted the way they voted. But check this out. Guess what she said? It took them a couple of days before they came forward. then she only came forward and said she could speak for all of them. She gave her the spin on it. And from this point on, they're not going to say nothing for us. Then she made a statement and said they were going to produce a book. Once she made that statement, it came real clear something wrong with this case. So now they back off right now and say they're not going to produce the book. But the fix was in from the beginning. They even said they had a so-called whistleblower inside of the prosecution department that gave information out. You give me 45 days and give me information, I can create all kinds of possibilities and tell you this is what took place. And they knew that. That's what I told people a long time ago, the boy was going to walk. People thought I was crazy. But it wasn't that hard to determine. The Air Force called me back. Brother Lee, you're right, man, you're right. That's an African, you know, this was an easy case. And then they want to play Alice in Wonderland with us. When I say Alice in Wonderland, I'm talking about Alice in Wonderland, one of the things in the book is a question that comes from the book is who had the right to find what is reality, what is. You know, whatever I say what is, that's what is. So they try to make us even believe that really there was no case from the beginning. That's a state of powerlessness of how they view us. For them even trying to attempt to even say that to us openly. Yes, he can shoot you down, but want the case from the beginning. It's a question of power. Women will organize ourselves, and we do. All people need a political party, a conscious, precise political party that will organize their collective energies towards one particular objective. That's liberating our people. We need a land base. Where would that be? Where should we direct that? And I'm not saying wherever yet, you don't have a role, but I do say that the Zionists understand they came and took Israel and made it official in 1948. But every Zionist around the world who may have never seen Israel understood that everything they do and whatever they do, their energies must be geared toward making sure Israel is a sovereign entity. What's so difficult for African people to understand the concept? Even if you don't want to go home, at least you must realize you have responsibility to have free your home no matter where yet. And then you have to worry about these Trayvon cases. In closing, sister, I hate to do this, but I hope you don't mind. I'd like to just raise this with the audience. If we serious about Trayvon and agree that it was wrong. We have many Trayvons, and unfortunately, I happen to involve myself in a recent case that's a continuation of Trayvon. There's a brother named Nike Foot that they're trying to do the same thing to him in Colorado. We are appealing to the African community to come and help this brother to keep the legal system from jamming him up off some false charges of child pornography on the computer. And the way they have terrorized him and his mother, and they're isolated right there in Colorado. They're begging for help. They're begging for people help. And he's going to be put in the same situation as Trayvon in. It's going to be an all-white jury. The brother just finished school, set to be an engineer, set to become a teacher. But they're going to take that away from him. And they're trying to kill his mother through putting guns and stuff to her head and hopefully give her a heart attack. She's 60 plus. So, if anybody hears this call tonight, for those who understand the case of Trayvon, we have many, I'm coming to appeal on behalf of the Fulton family, Michael and Katie. If you can email us at SavedOurSons2013@gmail.com. We'd like to send the information and communicate with you to see how you can help us out. They need our help. But the point of this call we are making isn't just for this case. It is to help create a process or organization to help all of our kids throughout this country, because there are many of the kids being jammed like that. And we need to do some education programs on how they use the new technology to entrap us. Right now, while I'm speaking to you, I'm also now faced with that same possibility, because how they are controlling my email account, and they are now can send information to me, and I can't respond back. And they can send stuff to you and make it look like you are engaged and you're part of things that you are not. And they got all kind of tools or laws they have already created to indict you as a terrorist, as a child pornography person. And these are the games they play, and you know, and people need to be aware of it. But we can't fight them individually. We got to do it collectively in mass critical, and in critical mass. So all these issues and things, Brother Haki, I agree with, Randy Shore, I agree with all, but put it in proper perspective historically, it's a question of power. We need to decide fundamentally what direction we're going to take. And whatever we come up collectively through our actions, it can test whether or not if it's truth or not. And once we realize if it's an error, at least we can correct that. I've never been one to advocate to see we defend ourselves inside the border of the United States. I've never been one. But I'm not going to be fact when we see that. But let's get together and work together and see concretely once we try these things or look at history and know there's no basis for it. Let's be reasonable and honest and move forward. And may history be our guide. So on the note, Sister Africa,
right.
Thank you for everything. You know, keep doing what you're doing. Again, to my people, I hope that, you know, for those who listen, you will contact us at SaveOurSons2013@gmail.com. I thank y'all.
All right, Brother Lee, and thank you. And we're going to have some dialogue very soon. We're going to do an edition of our program to really talk about some of the ways that this technology is going to be used against us. As we all know, recently there's been a lot of disclosure about the types of surveillances and other things that is going on with our telephones and, of course, with our computers. So we already know they're getting ready to set up a whole bunch of folks. There was COINTELPRO in the 1960s. Well, surely there's going to be something else today in this day and time, and needless to say, it's going to involve technology. So we're going to definitely have that conversation in depth in the very near future.
Mm-hmm. Can I just say one thing to your audience? We Google stay on your ground thing, try to see what laws the different states have adopted under this concept. Can I just make a quick statement of the country, the states that have this stand your ground concept law, the laws? They have Alabama, Florida, Kentucky.
Yeah, we announced that last night. We covered all of them last night.
Okay, good.
Yes,
good.
We read them on. You know, Pennsylvania's one.
Exactly. I was going to say that. Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Pennsylvania one. Yeah,
yep,
so,
we read all of them last night.
Yeah, so, you know, anyway,
absolutely.
I'm off and let you get back to your program. Thank you all for everything.
All right, my brother, good thanks. All right, family, we only have about 10 more minutes. We want to do two things. One thing that Brother Jamie indicated earlier, and that was about us coming together and really starting to deal more with our young folks, and so I wanted to just add to that, that again in October in revealing or releasing the MWM 5-year action plan and black print, we will also be declaring 2013 to 2014 the year of the black girl, or as some might want to call it, the year of the African-American girl, or the year of the African girl in America. But the bottom line is for the whole year from 2013 of October to 2014 of October is a specific focus on our young daughters. Now, that's what we'll be doing, and so we encourage other folks to, you know, groups, organizations, whatever, to do what you do. But for us to begin to focus on our young daughters from birth to 21, and particularly from 7 to 17, this year coming will allow us to do some one-on-one kinds of things, and as the brother said, this age group of sisters, they don't know anything about the Million Woman March. So what we've decided is that how are we going to keep the legacy, not just of the Million Woman March, but of our 12 sister saints, which we indicated earlier includes Mother Ella Baker, also Fannie Lou Hamer, Mother Fannie Lou Hamer, Queen Mother Moore, and so forth. We're going to give you all 12 very shortly because as of October the 25th, they will be installed in our operations from that point on. And every year we will celebrate these 12 women. This is our first 12 Sister Saints. So we'll be announcing who all of them are very shortly. And needless to say, you know Mother Harriet Tubman and Mother Sojourner Truth, Mother Ida B. Wells, they're all included. But the other thing we wanted to add to you is that we want to play a brief clip from Sister Asada. It's an older clip, of course, but nevertheless, it's always on time. We want to share that with you tonight before we close out. We're going to also hopefully give you just a little brief clipping from Mr. Farrakhan, his statement when the so-called FBI issued the put Sister Asada on the terrorist list and then raised the bounty to $2 million. So, without further ado,
what we're going to do again is place something for you. And, of course, this is going to be Sister Sada. And as indicated, you know, hearing her is always not only refreshing but uplifting, inspirational, but also extremely, extremely edifying. Certainly, whenever we can, we like to always, you know, revisit some of the things that she teaches us. And as Brother Lee indicated, you know, Sister's extremely powerful. This is taken from, I think, maybe Eyes of the Rainbow. And for those of you who have not seen Eyes of the Rainbow, you certainly need to. Let's see. Here we are.
I am giving the inner strength that I needed to overcome, or to be able to think about overcoming the tremendous odds that I were against with my grandmother. She came from Wilmington, North Carolina, to see me at Yardville Prison. I was in that prison. I was put in a maximum security unit in a cell, two guards in front of the cell, 24 hours a day, and so between two gun towers that could train their guns directly on the cell. I was told that I was in the Yardville unit for women, even though I was the only woman, and they tried to keep me there for the rest of my life. My grandmother came to visit me there to tell me a dream. And she came with all of my family, and everybody was happy. And I'm like, you know, what's happening with y'all? You know, this room. She had a dream. She had a dream. I'm like, okay. And so my grandmother's dream was that she was dressing me, that she was in an old house that she lived in when she lived in New York still. And she was putting clothes on me. I said, is that the dream? That's the dream. And I said, well, was I little or big? She said, no, you're big. So I thought, my God, the only time people dress anybody is when they're grown, is when they're dead. And so she said, no, I know what you're thinking. No, no, no. Well, this thing means is that you are going to leave this prison. I don't know when, but it's going to be much less time than you've already spent here. And, you know, I didn't understand it, to be honest. It didn't make any sense to me what this was happening, wearing clothes, have to do with getting out of prison. But my grandmother has always had dreams, and her dreams have always come true.
I don't know how my mother walked the trouble down.
Indeed, that was our sister, Sada Shakur. And again, we extend our blessings, our prayers, our love to our sister on this day, her Earth Day.
Yeah.
And we are so very, very thankful that she is safe, and we will continue to keep her in our prayers so that she can remain safe. Okay, we only have a few more minutes left, so we're going to go to one more caller for tonight. Caller, please give us your comment. And let's see, we are at 1613. We only have a few more moments, so please kind of make it as brief as you can. Well, I hate to rush you, but we do only have a few more minutes. Caller at 1613.
My hotel, Sister Faray.
My hotel.
Got Azure of Afrocentricity International, Philadelphia, PA chapter.
Yes, yes, my sister. How are you? Thank you for calling.
Hotep. Pep. I am so well. You, let me tell you, the last two nights, your show has really helped to calm my nerves. I've been in, you know, warrior, queen warrior mode for quite some time now. Calling on my Kentucky ancestors, the warrior queens of Ethiopia, Yaz Tatawa and Zynga. we African women in this country and around the world, we need our warrior queen, the spirit of our warrior queen ancestors to help us through these days and times of this murder and mayhem and just all kind of discord and iffet wrongdoing in the African family. And we continue to hold our African family together and up and be up and do what we need to do for our African family, which is a lot, and it always has been, but still not as much as our warrior queen ancestors before us. But Afro,
right.
I just wanted to say that Afrocentricity International Philadelphia PA chapter is an African think tank. We care about what's happening with African people around the world. We are active.
All right.
We are building. We are doing things. We are collaborating. And we are here. And we are not going anywhere. We have work to
all
do.
Right.
We comprehend that. And we are here to do the work that we need to do. I'm just sitting here reading this story about a little 13-year-old boy from Milwaukee, because this is who has been murdered by his neighbor, a 76-year-old white man. I don't know if y'all heard about this. And it's just open season on us, you know. It always has been open season on us. But for some reason, I don't know if Mercury is in retrograde, as my sisters say, who are more cosmically connected than I am. But it just seems to be elevated. And we cannot continue to allow this to happen. We have to, you know, educate our sons and our daughters to protect themselves, to communicate. We need to open safe communication pathways for our sons and daughters, and we need to support and have effective communication pathways amongst each other so that we could do the work that we need to do, because clearly we have a lot of work to do. And it's till we die.
Absolutely.
It's till we die. It's not going to let up. It's not, okay, I'm going to do this for 5 years and be good. No, that's not it. It's until we die, you know, until you can't breathe anymore. And then when you in your and when we're in our metaphysical realm, we need to send more energy to those that are still in the physical realm to continue to do the work we do. That's how we stay connected. That's how we continue the legacies of our African ancestors. It's just that real for us. It really is. And I just,
absolutely.
You know, I'm just filled with rage. I've been filled with rage for quite some time. I'm sure that I've passed this rage on to my granddaughter who is here. I'm confident that she's going to continue to build among African people and continue to work and the legacies that I'm building for her right now. So I'm thankful for the shows that you're doing. I'm thankful for the National Million Women's March, and I'm thankful that you have stepped out there, the National Million Women March organization has stepped out there and even mentioned the fact that African women need a defense league. You know, that is so powerful. That is so powerful to me. And I just want to, you know, call in and co-sign on the fact that,
yes,
you know, I definitely want to be a part of that. I want to work with sisters who are a part of that. You know, because I have a daughter, I have a granddaughter, I have a niece, I have cousins, I have female cousins, I have, you know, my aunts that came before me, my mom is still here. You know, I don't want to be a, like, you're not going to step on my neck and I'm not going to try to get up. No, that's, you know,
that's
just not happening. You know, we got to fight. We have to fight till we die. I'm going to keep saying that. We have to fight until we cannot fight anymore. You know, we have to be buried in our graves so that we can go home and be free. You know, we're going to fight to fight. You know,
all freedom.
Yeah, all freedom. The spirit of Ella Baker and, you know, Fannie Lou Hamer and all
that's
those
right.
women that came before us and We owe them. We owe them so much, and we owe the baby. We owe our female daughters, our male sons to come, And, you know, our work is just infinite. Our work is infinite. We are at war. We have been at war for quite some time now. And, it's sad that Trayvon Martin had to be the Emmett Till of our time, because you would think that in between that time, we wouldn't, you know, we would get it together and we would have, you know, we wouldn't have to have another Trayvon Martin. You know, it's really unfortunate that we had to have another Trayvon Martin. I'm sure that this is not something that was willed, you know, by our ancestors, you know, for us.
Right.
But we have to acknowledge that even in the ancestral realm, you know, all of the ancestors are not ours. You know,
that's why, I don't know if you've ever heard me say, when I kind of talk about our ancestors, I will very more than likely say our freedom-fighting ancestors.
Yes, that is very important to point out, because, first of all, you know, all spirits are not ancestral. Some spirits are, you know,
right.
They're in that realm, but they don't mm-hmm. serve as our ancestors. You know, and that's very real. That's very real.
Mm-hmm.
When we comprehend, you know, what's happening with us on a metaphysical a level. You know, so I just wanted to, you know, co-sign, give you a fist bump to continue the work that you're doing, a fist bump and a hug to continue the work that you're doing.
That's right.
So Million Women's March. And build, we need to build, we need to come from all angles. I was dialoguing with this brother today, and he was saying, you know, who do African people think they are by expecting to be treated like humans? I was like, excuse me, we created this human thing. What are you talking about? Of course you're expected to be treated by humans, like humans. Just because the people who are not treating, there are people out here who don't want to treat us like humans. We don't acquiesce to what they want. You know,
that's right.
We put what we want in front of all of that, and that's what we fight towards. Just because people don't want to treat African people like we're human, that does not mean that we say, well, okay, I'm just going to understand that about you. No, absolutely not. We're going to continue to demand that we're treated like humans, because We are the human. If you want to talk about a human being, you can't be talking about any human beings if you're not talking about African people. That's just dead in the water. So let's get that straight. But I just wanted to, like I said, fist bump and hug to you, sis, for doing the work that you're doing. I respect you. I love you. I continue to want to deal with you. Afrocentricity International Philly PA chapter, we're here, and we are doing our work. We just collaborated in May with Africans from around the world, from Canada, from Brazil, from Paris,
all
from
right.
Belgium, from Germany. We had Africans in the building, and we're all experiencing the same kind of madness. And so we have to come together. You know, we have to unite. We have to be the ants that unite to trip up that elephant, you know, because the elephant is definitely in the room. And, you know, we got to trip up that elephant. You know, and we got to make sure that when he's stomping, when that elephant is stomping, that we're not just the grass underfoot. We have to turn into them stinging fire ants and burn them legs and burn them feet when they come down to try to stomp on us like they've been doing, you know, all this time. So I just, you know, it's just really, you know, some powerful times. And I wanted to just read off this list of the young men that have been murdered in this country, you know, with they didn't have
gonna
a gun.
Have
it's
the
unarmed.
Yeah, you're going to have to hold it, because we only have like 1 minute left. But tomorrow, 9:30, we're doing another special edition. We invite you to come back and join us, because we're going to have one of the brothers from the Roots with us tomorrow. Dice Raw will be with us. And we're going to talk about the prison industrialized complex. We're going to continue our dialogue, of course, in the Trayvon Martin situation. But just to come back tomorrow, you'll be able to read that off. We're down to our last minute, and we want to close out with Sister Asada Shakur. And my sister, I love you black. And much respect.
Yes.
We're going to close our family with
Sister Asada Shakur, and again, we thank all of you for being with us tonight. We'll be back tomorrow, 9:30 this time. We're going to do a tribute to John Coltrane and connect the dots from bebop to hip-hop to now Ma'at. Till next time, family, much respect to all of you. We're going to leave you, as we oftentimes greet you, with Ma'at and Hotep, but also right now with our sister Asada Shakur.
We've seen a lot of confusion. They attack people on all kinds of levels. I was one of the people who was targeted by COINTELPRO, but there were many, many others. As a member of the Black Panther Party in New York City, I witnessed 21 of our most effective, most articulate organizers and leaders be victimized by a conspiracy charge. They were charged with conspiracy, and it's hard for the same. They were charged with conspiracy to blow up department stores. They were charged with conspiracy to blow up subways. And one of the most insane charges was conspiracy to blow up the Bronx Botanical Gardens, and nobody could ever figure out, you know, why anybody would want to blow up flowers. That certainly was not part of our political program and platform. But however, they were put in prison for most of them spent 2 years, more than 2 years in prison. Each was given $100,000 bail. And what that did was to limit our effectiveness in organizing in our community and make us have to spend a lot of our time, energy, and resources liberating our comrades instead of being able to effectively organize in our community. I believe personally that COINTELPRO is still going on under another name and a much more sophisticated, much more dangerous type of COINTELPRO. So we should never think that that was an era that was in history. The United States government has not changed. In fact, I think it has become more repressive. The number of people in prisons, I think, backs me up. The number of people that are killed by police backs me up. The number of names on computers backs me up. And the fact that Jesse Helms is in on the Senate floor talking about arresting people for coming to a youth festival. So I think that as time goes on, it's more and more obvious that repression is one of the most frequent tools used by the United States government to smash anybody who is fighting for real justice, for real liberty, and for real freedom here in the United States. In my case, I was taught this, as I said before, by COINTELPRO, and I was forced to go underground. I was forced to disappear. The police knocked down my door, took everything. I mean, they took my posters, my books, my records, my underwear. And, you know, in my underwear, they took everything, the so-called evidence, and they tried to accuse me of aiding and abetting harboring fugitives. I decided that there were two choices. I could talk to the FBI and cooperate with the FBI, or I could disappear. At that time, I considered cooperating with the FBI an unprincipled act, because I thought, and I still think, that the FBI is not a tool to instrument of oppression that targets people of color, oppressed people, and specifically African people who are oppressed in the United States. So I thought that cooperating would be immoral, and I decided to disappear. I decided to go underground, and at the time I was very innocent. I thought, well, you know, all they're looking for me before is a union, a baby, harbor, and fugitive. It was a lie. They never continued that charge. They never made that charge formal. But I thought, well, like, you know, this is going to roll over. This is a passing moment. But I was very suspicious. What happened was that the FBI and the New York City Police Department, their Red Squad, began to systematically feed news stories to the Daily News, to all of the New York City and national newspapers, creating this image of this woman that is this terrible person, that is this criminal, that is this murderer, that is this bank robber, that is this terrorist. And what they did was they took a photograph of a woman robbing a bank. They put my name under it, wanted, and they put that picture everywhere, in every bank, on the side of buses, on big posters like this, on the subway, everywhere. And what they were doing was creating the condition where any cop in the United States could shoot me down, had a license, you know, just I was like, dead to me. And they came out and said, you know, we, you know, we will kill her.